some people just kind of, they slowly stop talking and drone off. And it kind of demonstrates that you don't think it's that interesting. It kind of, for lack of a better term, you lose social value. But instead, if you said, oh, you guys don't seem very interested, you want to switch topics? Like, it's a much better, clearer way.
My name is Sky, NFT survivor turned content creator.
And I'm Aiden, addicted video gamer turned content creator.
And you're listening to Kaizen, the weekly podcast where we talk about ideas, relationships, and the human condition.
In this episode, we talked about how humor is a skill you can learn, the best humor first principles to instantly become funnier, and some examples of each humor first principle. This is the comedy humor episode that I wish I had listened to 3 years ago when I was first getting into comedy, because it would have drastically increased my clarity for how to be funnier. And quite frankly, I am very surprised an episode like this doesn't exist online already, because we did some research before recording this. There are no episodes on all the humor first principles in one distilled audio recording. So you guys are getting something special here, and I hope you use it to your advantage. When I first got into humor, because of you, actually, when you got me into stand-up comedy about a year and a half ago, I saw humor as a very wishy-washy mystic art. Right? Like, you would either be good at it or you were bad at it. And the people that were good at it just were born good at it. People that were bad at it were destined to suck. And thankfully, I have realized with your help that, like with any skill, humor can be broken down into first principles that you can measure and then build in yourself. So today I thought it would be very helpful for anyone interested in learning to become more humorous themselves if we went through some of those first principles and gave an example for each, so that people can take away 2 to 3 and start trying to work on those after the episode. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think we're going to take the humor out of humor by butchering it, taking it apart. We're going to apply the scientific method and make this as boring as your physics class. So I like the idea. Yeah. Talk about certain principles that we think you can use to actively tell jokes, because it's such a complicated thing. As you said, a mist, a veil. What does that even mean? We're going to try and break that down, hopefully, and maybe we're not funny at all, but I'll cross my fingers. Should we I guess start with the principle and discuss it? Or do you want to give like a broad overview of all the principles we'll discuss? Or
I think start with the principle and discuss it. But there is one meta principle that you probably agree is a thing to discuss, which is if there's one thing I wish I knew before getting into comedy, it was this. The benign violation theory, humor. This theory encapsulates why anything is funny. And
there are exceptions. There
are some exceptions, but the first principles we're going to talk about probably will stem from this idea. So how the benign violation theory of humor works is anything that's funny is both benign and a violation of a social norm. What is considered benign and what's considered a social norm violation changes based on the audience. But in summary, something that's benign is, it's far away physically or intellectually. Like, it's far enough away that it's not uncomfortable to talk about. So for example, 9/11. If you had joked about it, I'm not going to make a joke about it.
Okay, banana peel. Let's imagine you slip on a banana peel. That's not
okay,
funny.
Okay.
No, we're not. Okay, there's a banana peel on the ground. You slip and you fall. You're like, what? This is terrible. This is the worst day of my life. This is awful. Now, if you see a stranger fall on the banana, then it's funny because there's some distance.
There's some distance. Exactly. I'm
and
glad
what
you
was alluding to
was, cheered me off.
I think you're going to go with time. As in, if enough time has passed, then you can joke about it or if something's far enough away. But the idea behind the benign part is that you move something further away from yourself. You can make jokes about a war if you're not in it and if the war was 200 years ago.
Yeah.
There's distance.
Exactly.
Cool.
So that's the benign. That's the benign part. The violation part is a violation of a social norm. So, for example, if I was giving a TED talk and the first thing I said was, I want you to turn to your neighbor, tickle each other, right? You wouldn't do that in real life. Very much odd if you thought it was normal to just turn to someone you'd never met before and just start tickling. I mean, maybe some culture somewhere, that's okay. But not in the US, it's not. So when you combine those two things, both benign and a violation, that's how you get humor. And as you're going to see with most of the first principles we talk about, I think you can bring it back to them being benign and also a violation to some extent. And that's what makes them funny.
Mm-hmm. And again, like this theory, it does apply, but you can't really encapsulate every type of joke into a single theory. They've tried that. It's just there's so many different variations that it's not going to work for everything. But the general idea makes sense. You violate some kind of social norm or some kind of idea, and then the benign part makes it distant enough that it's funny.
Exactly. Yeah. So why don't you start with one principle, and then I think we can shift back and forth.
So the first principle is intentional misinterpretation. So this principle means someone says something and you like pick a word out where you interpret what they said in a way that they did not intend. So for example, let's imagine that you're feeling quite sick. You walk up, Aiden's you and me, and then Aiden, you say, okay, Aiden, you're sick. And you're like, I'm feeling under the weather today. And then I say, shall I get you an umbrella? Or he says, one second. Okay, we're a married couple. And then I'm the wife or something. I'm like, honey, it's pouring outside. It's raining cats and dogs. And then you say, perfect. Jimmy's been talking about a pet for months. I'll go catch one outside. Okay, one more. I wrote these in class. That's why they're so bad. Your friend walks up to you. He's like, yo, bro, let's lift. You want to work out today? And then I say, I mean, usually I work out, or usually I work inside. It's air conditioned. Why would I move my desk outdoors? As in, like, you're saying work out as in the physical thing, but you're interpreting it as in the job. And then with the cats and dogs things, you're interpreting it not as the saying it's raining quite heavily, but instead as physically the cats and dogs are falling down. And the last one, I'm feeling under the weather, as in are they actually physically in space under the weather? Shall I get an umbrella? Does that make sense?
All those are great examples. And I think this one definitely takes a bit more skill than some of the ones that we will talk about in a bit. But if you can learn how to do it, I think it's one of the most interesting to me, because there's a lot of different ways you can misinterpret what someone's saying in many different ways.
Yeah.
Also, I love this one as well because it helps you build a world. That's one of my favorite ways to banter with people, is if you build a world and then they join in with you and suddenly you've got like a minute long thing going where they're like, imagine if in one of those examples, they went along with what you said, like the cats and dogs example. They're like, oh, really? Well, get the trampoline net, get the butterfly net, like, heck yeah.
You're gonna take a blow.
What breed of dog do you want to find? Like, got this whole world started. Yeah, that's great. Another first principle, which I personally love, but it's very polarizing, is sarcasm. This is essentially when you say the opposite of what you mean. Now, the problem is that many people do not understand sarcasm. You have to make it abundantly obvious that you're being sarcastic by changing your voice, smiling, even doing something with your body. Otherwise, they will not understand. I think we know our mom is one of these people. So there have been times where I have said something in complete sarcasm. Like I remember during the summer, there was one time you were not there where I walked in and I saw one of her videos and she was like, well, what'd you think of it? She has a YouTube channel. And I was like, that was the worst video I've ever seen in my entire life. And she didn't know I was joking at first. She was like, oh no. And I was like, mom, being sarcastic, Jesus Christ. Like, so yeah, you got to make it very clear, but if you can, I love it. So a couple examples of sarcasm at its best. Let's say you're walking outside with, and you see a friend and it's absolutely pouring rain. It's thundering. Zeus has come from the sky and is pissed. And the first thing you say to them is, beautiful weather, isn't it? It's small, but it'll get a chuckle. If that's how you don't say like, hi, how are you?
No,
you say that. Yeah. What's another good one? By the way, cut in if you can.
Okay, even just in class, like, okay, we're an hour and a half in, boring math lecture. The teacher has pulled not a single joke. And I turn around to my friend. I'm like, well, I'm having the most fun I've had in my entire life. Or like, it's just the opposite of what you're feeling, but you say it with a certain voice and then you get a chuckle, as you said.
Exactly.
Beautiful weather, but you're in a hurricane. Yeah.
Ooh, one last tip for using sarcasm. If you're going to do it through text, it's even harder because there is no emotion. There is no way to show emotion. So my recommendation, if you're going to try to do sarcasm through text, try and bias towards doing it with someone you know, because if they know you're sarcastic in real life, they're more likely to get the sarcasm through text. It doesn't mean you can't use it to someone that doesn't know you in real life. And also use emojis, because emojis, they convey emotion. So like my favorite way to show sarcasm in a text is saying something sarcastic and then doing a winky face, right?
Mm-hmm.
Without the winky face emoji, it could very easily be misinterpreted. Like, why was this the example that came to mind? I have to use it now.
Okay.
So I was on a dating app, right? Hinge. And this person's profile picture was of them in a furry costume. So I was very scared. I was like, no, this can't be real. So I was too intrigued. I had to make a sarcastic joke. So I was like, I'm going to call the animal police on you in the text, but I didn't do a winky face. And they took it serious.
Are you serious?
They took it serious. Yeah. They were like, what do you mean? Like, I've been a furry for over a year and a half. Like, how dare you? And they didn't have a winky face either. I'm pretty sure they did not know I was being sarcastic. So there's an example of where it can go in the deep end.
That was a good example. I did not expect that.
Yeah.
I called a hound. What's it called? I don't even know what it's called.
Furry?
Animal police? No, the
oh, the animal police. Show. Oh, PETA. PETA.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
I'm going to call PETA on you.
Okay. So we have intentional misinterpretation where you just interpret what someone said in a different light. We also have sarcasm where you say the opposite of what you mean, but you change your intonation, change your voice. And also, I think a slight smile or a smirk can really help convey that you're joking. I do have another one, misdirection, which is less so a specific joke archetype, although it can be, but it's more of a general conversational principle. So misdirection is you get a conversation or a joke to be going one direction, and then you swap it at one point. You flip around. And for example, I'm loving this restaurant. The locale, the ambience, the food. This is great. Honey, let's never come here again. As in, let's never. Where you're watching a movie. God, this is the scariest horror movie you've ever seen. This is going to be terrifying, but there's no jump scares.
Yeah.
Something like that. Those weren't that funny, but I think a better way is actually when you're telling stories. So here's one. I want to tell a story from Singapore. Climbing. So like, okay, me and my brother, I met his girlfriend, we're meeting some new friends, and we go to this climbing gym. And I'm reasonably athletic, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to go on this climbing gym, I'm going to be Tarzan, I'm going to climb these mountains. They're going to be like, oh my gosh, this guy, so amazing, you're so athletic, this is great. And I'm getting on the wall, I'm the first to go, I climb up, but 10 meters up the wall, my fear of heights starts kicking in. And I look down, I'm already starting to shake, and I'm 15 meters up, I'm like, oh no, my image, Tarzan. I'm looking down and I'm shaking and my eyes are like bulging out of my face. I'm like, let me down. I'm like panicking. And everyone below me is like laughing instead of thinking, oh, wow, he's so athletic. They're like, oh, this guy's a dumbass. So I don't know how entertaining that was, but that's more of a going one direction, like you're building yourself up in one way and then you flip the story. And I don't know if that was engaging or not. Maybe you can be the judge. But
no, it was a great example. It was like, and I love how you tied it into a story. I actually have another story from Singapore of misdirection. We were walking around the library with my girlfriend. And at one point, I think Lauren asked me if I was focused or not, because we were seeing all these students around us doing intense studying during the summer. And we're like, wow, these people are very focused. And so I was like, oh, I'm really focused. And then as soon as I say that, I see this, I veer off into the bookshelves and I'm like, wow, look at that book. Oh, and this one. Oh my goodness.
Really good.
So yeah, it's just completely misdirecting what the tagline, through line of the conversation or what you just said. Were you done with that one?
I think we had some more. Referring to a track athlete. Again, this is written in class. Referring to a track athlete, he's the Quicksilver, the fastest man I know. This dude is the speed of our running team. And then you say, really? Yeah, he's the first to lose every time.
I was not expecting that.
You didn't expect it, did you?
No. I think that's the point.
Yeah, that is the point. That is precisely it.
So another first principle, which is so universal, is the rule of three. This doesn't even just apply to comedy. This applies to like literally any persuasive argument whatsoever or writing. Generally, humans are very good at memorizing things in three. It's just a nice number. But in comedy, the way it works is you say three things, but usually two of them are alike and one of them is out of place. And that usually is the third one, because the first two, you don't get a laugh because it's normal. And then suddenly the third one's like, whoa, that's out of place. Jesus Christ. So a good example is I had a wonderful Thanksgiving dinner last year. We got together with my family. We cooked a turkey and then we killed all our neighbors.
Wow. Benign violation. That's too close.
I think I worded it wrong, but the reason it's supposed to be like that, it's, that's what I messed up. That's why it didn't work. I should have said we celebrated Thanksgiving very traditionally in our family.
Oh, right? Okay.
That makes sense. Yeah, that was probably, you must have been like, Oh my God.
So you're referring to the pilgrims and then
referring to the pilgrims.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean,
but you missed that one key word makes or breaks the joke.
Exactly. Isn't it incredible how that one word changes the meaning so much?
Yeah. Because you need that time distance.
Yeah.
And you also need the history thing.
Yeah. So that really shows you how important word choice is in comedy. What's a good rule of three example you have?
I don't know if I have one ready at the moment. Yeah, sorry. I did not prepare one.
You're good. That's one good example, that Thanksgiving one. Another one is I was doing a ADS speech for speech and debate about Amish people. And one of the things that I said is, Amish people, you know, they got long beards, butter. I said it wrong again. I'm so sad. you mess it up and it's just over. I was going to say, like, what are the Amish value? The Amish value three things: God, family, and long ass beards. And that would have worked a lot better if I had gotten it correct from the get go.
I think another principle is exaggeration. I forget who said this quote. Somebody did. Someone said it. But they said that the heart of every joke is an exaggeration. So like there's something that's not true. As in even what you just said with the beards, that's an exaggeration, right? At the heart of that, like that's not the thing they value most. You're exaggerating. It's a altered reality. But this would be like continuing the joke and exaggerating it more and more. Like, I'm blind as a bat. Even if you have 20/20 vision. Or what's a better example? I guess I'll go with the gym example. Like your friend walks out of the gym, they're looking big. You're like, oh my God, bro, look at those thighs. Are you a Viking? Like, this is insane. How'd you fit through the doorway? Those slabs of meat, man. I want to put that on a stick and roast that over a fire. Something like that. Like you're just saying he looks good. You're exaggerating how good he looks. You're saying he looks big and then you keep going.
Yeah. No, exactly. I completely agree. It's interesting how with a lot of these comedy tips, first principles, they are sort of meta in that a lot of them mix together in together to make something even more funny. So like, I think one of the things that's very important to realize with listening to this podcast episode is you can get pretty dang funny using each of these on their own, but the people that are absolute showstoppers, the best stand-up comedians, integrate them all together in a way that makes it even more funny than any of them are individually.
Yeah. Also, I mean, like a little self-conscious. It's hard to like try and be funny on the podcast.
Usually
it's more effortless. Usually it's more like you just kind of think of it. But here, like, we're trying to be funny. Yeah, it's been kind of.
No, I totally get you. Another first principle is comparisons. This is where you compare something. It's kind of self-explanatory. A good example is I had a chemistry teacher in my first year at Cornell who was offered to have dinner with the Dr. Heisenberg, the one that made the uncertainty principle. And he said no because he was studying for a prelim. So that's like if Michael Jackson came back from the dead, came up to you and offered to make you an exclusive music album, and you said, no, I gotta go to the dentist. It's just horrible. Yeah, so that you can see that's a comparison of like Dr. Stephen Lee and Dr. Heisenberg's situation with if Michael Jackson came back from the dead and then did that.
That's great.
It's a contrast that makes it funny.
Even I feel like there's common jokes people know about where you compare someone to something they're not, like a track athlete. Oh, okay, Usain Bolt. Or even just a smart kid in class. You're like, okay, Einstein. Like you're comparing them to the ideal, the masculine, not the, what is it called? The smartest or most speedy version of whatever they're currently doing.
Yeah. Yeah. What's another first principle you have?
Stick with the joke, commit. As in, like, imagine in your jokes that halfway through, I wasn't laughing. You're like, oh, yeah, the Amish, God, family, and never mind. It's just like, joke, you have to finish. Because if you don't finish, first of all, it's kind of weird. Also, it just kind of demonstrates you don't think it's funny. And sometimes you can get away with the joke's not funny, but you're so committed and you deliver it and you're kind of relaxed about it and you say the full thing that you still get a laugh. Because you're not unsure. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think this one is also really important to mention because it takes confidence to be able to do this. All of these take confidence, right? Humor is not something that you can do without confidence. But this one particularly, it takes some guts to continue on with a joke when nobody is laughing. And sometimes you're
going
to get
going, but I would finish your sentence.
Yeah.
I wouldn't stop halfway in between.
Yeah. Imagine if while you were telling a story, like you noticed that people weren't super engaged. So instead of speeding up, you were just like, no, I'm just not going to finish. Like you got, all right, that's it. That's the story. Like,
well, there are ways you can approach that. Like during the story, no one's really paying attention. Some people just kind of, they slowly stop talking and drone off. And it kind of demonstrates that you don't think it's that interesting. It kind of, for lack of a better term, you lose social value. But instead, if you said, oh, you guys don't seem very interested, you want to switch topics? Like, it's a much better, cleaner way. Instead of just slowly dying off, you see the difference?
Yeah.
Because in one, you kind of, quote unquote, maintain control and you switch the conversation. And the other one, it just slowly dies. And everyone's like, oh, didn't keep it going.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I think another first principle that ties very well with sarcasm is irony. Irony and sarcasm are often misinterpreted as the same. They are not. Irony is when something is out of place and that makes it funny. But it's not the same as like incongruence or misdirection. It's like what you would expect is not the case for the situation. It's hard to explain without giving an example. So I'll just give an example. Let's say your friend Bert, the fireman, house burns down. That's it. Like, it's just the friend Bert, the fireman's house burns down. And you're just like, that seems a little like,
Or your financial advisor goes bankrupt.
Yeah, your financial advisor goes bankrupt. Exactly. Or like, you've heard of this saying before, but like, you're in the ocean and you die of dehydration. It's like water everywhere, but not a drop to drink.
Yep.
Do you think that was clear enough? Like,
I think it was clear.
Is?
You have a situation where it's ironic. Like, I don't know quite what to say. I guess like a way to think about it is you take a person who would be very good in one situation, and then it doesn't work out. So as you said, the fireman and his house burns down. He should be the one who fights fires, or the financial advisor. He should be the one who's got good finances, but he's bankrupt. Or the ocean, there's a lot of water, but you can't drink anything. It's like a situation where it kind of should work out, but somehow it doesn't. It doesn't quite encapsulate it.
Yeah. Do you have another first principle? I still have a couple more, I think.
Well, sure, you're sure.
We're getting.
What do you got?
Another one I really like is saying new normal things in new words. This one's especially good for service jobs. If you want to break service level jobs out of their robotic nature, because, you know, and you can't blame them. They've been doing the same thing over and over again every single day. You know, what do you want for coffee? What do you want for your order? This is a really good one to to break them out of that. So, for example, I'm sorry to steal your joke here. I just love it so much. Like, you're at Chipotle and they ask you what you'd like for your order. Most people are going to say, I'd like a burrito bowl or something like that. But instead, you're like, yeah, I'd like one of those plastic metal hole thingies and a bit of land meat inside of that, please. And if you say that, like, instantaneously, the person, their eyes like light up, they awaken, they're like, oh, crap. Like, this, they're taken out of their stupor and their day is heightened.
I like that. You basically use new words to describe everyday things. Even like with fuel in the car, gasoline. I think it was Addison who said, he's like, I need to get some more fuel units or cubes.
He calls them cubes. Yeah, cubes.
He calls them cubes.
Which is weird. Cubes. That's so stupid.
And also, like, even today I got a joke with a similar vein, although it's more of a comparison, but we were waking up, 9 a.m., we're tired, we need coffee. One guy's like, I'm tired. I'm like, look at my laptop, it's at 2%. I'm like, bro, I'm at 2%. As in saying, I'm like a laptop at low battery. So, yeah. And that got a laugh. That was, yeah. Same. That's novel funny. Ways, same thing. Not just I'm tired, I'm at 2%. Not just it's gasoline fuel units.
Yeah.
Not just it's beef, it's land.
I still think there's two main more ones, but I can tell you them if you want to.
I think, one of them is self-deprecation.
Oh, that was not one of them, but yeah, that I would love to hear you explain that.
Self-deprecation is when the butt of the joke is you. And it's not that people are laughing at you, it's that you're okay laughing at yourself and they laugh with you. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And you have a specific example of self-deprecation.
Of self-deprecation? Ooh. Maybe something like, no, I'm blanking. This is I'm unfortunate. Blanking.
Yeah, I guess we're not very funny.
No, we're not.
Yeah. Self-deprecation right there. A little
that
bit.
That is. I was about to say. I was like, you just did it.
Yeah, we suck at this podcast.
We should have come up with examples for that beforehand.
But the idea is you make fun of yourself.
Yeah.
I've seen, like, it's that like when fat people like make fun of their fatness. I've seen that and I've seen it work successfully.
Oh yeah. When they're like, I'm so fat I could use my, I don't need a pillow. I just use myself.
Yeah, something like that. Or like in a joke. Yeah, like, someone walked up to me yesterday and they said, do you want to go to the gym? And I was like, no. I've seen that on stage. I've seen that work. But yeah, like from the fat person saying that.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like you go into a store with someone, you grab a chocolate bar, they look at you and you start acting like super addicted. You're like, I need it.
It's a bit intense.
Yeah. That makes sense. Another one. This is, I don't know if this is first principle per se, but accents in general can make things funny. If, very big if. If the
what are you
accent,
gonna do? I'm like waiting for you.
If the accent helps with the actual joke, right? If you're just doing the accent for the accent's sake and there's nothing else, I think that's a little bit more questionable. But for instance, an example I have of this, I was at Second Dam at Cornell a few weeks ago with some friends, and we were walking across this river. Right before we walked across the river, I stopped one of my friends quickly. And I'm like, what if there's a crocodile? You're not going to shit for any crocodile? Like, Jesus Christ. What are you, just some like daredevil or something? And the fact that I did it in an Australian accent to try and simulate as if we were in like the outback about to get killed.
Perfect.
By
That's a great joke.
yeah, that is how you use accents. Do you have an accent joke?
No.
Damn it. I was so hoping for an incredible accent joke. Oh, another one? We were in Singapore. Sky was getting me to join him for jiu-jitsu for the first time ever. Never done jiu-jitsu before. So I was a little bit intimidated. But I knew that there was a way to intimidate the person that I was fighting against back. So first round that I get in, I look this other guy in the eyes. And instead of saying like, a good match, bro, or like, you know, good luck or whatever, I go, Suka Blit, fight me. Like in a Russian accent.
He was terrified.
He was terrified. He pooped his pants. He was like, oh no, I can't do this. So yeah, two examples of accents right there.
That's good. I think you had one last principle and then we can maybe wrap up.
Yeah, sure. I think it's a good idea. Do you have one more? I have one other.
I got nothing.
Okay. My last one is character bit. This is where you either play a character that already exists in the world, or you make up your own character and play that. So if I wanted to play James Bond in a joke, then what are some classic things that I could say to make it clear that I'm playing James Bond? Well, first one that comes to mind is, it's Bond. James Bond.
The name's Bond.
As soon as you say that, people know that you're talking James Bond, right?
007. Agent 007.
Yeah. or like one of your friends goes out onto stage like for a public speaking venue or something, and then before they say something, you turn to your other friend and you're like, Jesus Christ, it's Jason Bourne.
You just bring him into your world, basically.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah. Can you think of any other character bit, or do you think we've gotten that?
Well, I really like running the Terminator. When I leave, I'm like, I'll be back. I like running that.
Please tell me you don't do that on a date.
Hasta la vista.
You say that like you get to the point where you have to pay for a check, and then you just you're like, hasta la vista, baby. And then you're just
I have always wondered though, like when you travel to a new country, like I'm surprised there's not more people who just don't pay. Like you could just walk. You're leaving the country. You're not going to be back. I'm impressed at our moral aptitude as a human race. Really, I am.
I'm glad you put it that way. Moral aptitude. Yeah. So summarizing, we're not going to go through every single Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you.
Yeah. So this is when you're telling a joke and you're making a world and then you just kind of keep going. So like me, for example, I truly have a fear of nuclear war. I don't know why, but in the Netherlands, every Monday, they have this alarm that goes off. It's like a routine alarm for testing, just so that in the case of a crisis, we're prepared. And the alarm will go off every Monday and I hear it, I'm like, oh, shit. And I think something's going down. And I always like somehow when this happens, I catch like a glint of something in my eye, like a light glint. And every single time I swear, I think that like a nuclear bomb has gone off and I have seen like the light and I'm about to be incinerated because the light would come. You'd have like maybe half a second. I don't know how accurate that is to physics, but I'm like, okay, what could possibly be my solution to this problem? How can I evade a nuclear explosion? I'm like, okay, well, I live in the Netherlands, right? What if I go to the store and I buy some weed because it's legal, and then I get so high by smoking, get so high that I float above the mushroom cloud? Yes. Joke accomplished. Let's go.
I like it. I like that a lot. And man, you could have quite the banter chain with someone over that. Like,
yeah, like someone if else. You bought like mushrooms, would you be immune? because it's muffin style. Yeah. So
exactly. Or something like, can I join you? Can I like hold on to your waist as you lift above the clouds? We can be the soul. We can be Adam and Eve for when we get back down.
Restaurant bill, which I left, then I'll consider.
Yeah. Hasta la vista, baby. Awesome. Yeah. World building, I love. World building's so fun. Because that one, that's one of the only ones out of every single one we mentioned that you can continue after you say it. Because like, you know, you finish a rule of three, it's kind of over. You finish a comparison, it's kind of over. Whereas with world building,
you can do it well enough. You can keep all the principles going. That's true. If you choose.
You can. But world building in particular, I really enjoy for banter.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and you just heard all those first principles and you're like, I am overwhelmed. What do I do? This is my recommendation. Choose 2 to 3 of the principles we just talked about.
It's over.
Yeah, hey, just give up. Exactly.
No, I'm sorry.
Sky using the first principles in meta at the end of the episode. Yeah, just choose 2 to 3 and try and actively use them throughout the next week. And then come back and choose another 2 to 3. It's going to be too overwhelming if you do all of them at the same time. So, yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Well, you're assuming that we were funny enough for someone to make it this far to the podcast. I guess the last, I was going to say there's a couple more principles, but we're not going to say that. Yeah, there's a couple more.
Yeah.
We'll leave it there.
Yeah.
Well, good luck, everyone.
Good luck out there, soldier. If people don't think you're funny after watching this episode, it's your fault.
It's our fault. No, it's our fault. We'll take blame.
No, it's always the viewer's fault. Never the people making it. This guy's just like, all right.